Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Every CEO out there listening and every CEO who's not listening all have the idea that their sales leaders and their sales people can do a better job. They can continue growing and they can be peak performers. And there is no one better that I know to help them do this than my guest today, Anthony Iannarino. And I'm so excited to have you here, Anthony, because we're going to talk about lots of good things and ways that CEOs can really support their sales leaders and their salespeople to become peak performers. And we're going to talk about your new book, which is pretty exciting too.
Thanks for having me on. It's good to see you always.
Thank you. Thank you. So Anthony has written many books. Did you tell me five just a minute ago before we started recording?
Five books. Yeah.
Five books. I don't know how he does it. He tells me that he sleeps. So, you know, I'm going to have to get his secrets later. But most recently he published the Elite Sales Strategies book, and coming very soon, within just a matter of days, is his newest book, Leading Growth. And that is for CEOs, sales leaders, and anyone really focused on that revenue growth at their organization. So let's jump in and talk about what's happening today with sales training, sales coaching, you know, improving, right, what we do to help customers buy from us so that we can kind of move from there into how do we help CEOs help their teams do that?
You're really starting like right at the beginning of the book, because at the beginning of the book, we have to recognize that there are a lot of external challenges right now.
Yes.
In the environment. So somebody on LinkedIn said to me last week, keep disrupting the industry. And I'm like, I'm not disrupting the industry. All I'm doing is documenting the strategies and tactics that work because the buyer has a different problem than they've ever had before. They're more confused. They're more uncertain. They have a difficult time getting consensus. It's not just consensus in their team. It's consensus in the organization, which is very difficult to do. We also have external things happening, and just things like supply chains and inflation and all of these things that are headwinds for us. And when you think about the job of being a sales manager or a sales leader, I would describe those as some of the more difficult roles that you can have in sales, because we also have a set of internal challenges that we have to address.
Right.
So those things would be like, I don't have enough opportunities. These opportunities aren't moving fast enough through our pipeline for us to reach our goals. I have this huge variability between salesperson A and salesperson B. They're both selling the same thing. They have the same manager. They have the same price. And one of them is doing wonderful and the rest of them are not doing nearly as well. And so we have all these things that we have to look at. And when I read most books that come out by all of our friends. So Alice and I run in the same circles and we know everybody and we get everybody's book and we read them and we talk to them on podcasts like this. But what I realized was that there wasn't something like the only sales guide you'll ever need. So the first book that I wrote was The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need, an unfortunate title when you have a 3-book deal and now you're on book 5. So it's not truth in advertising for
sure.
Not
the only sales guide you'll ever need, but it was a good title.
It was a good title. It happened to work. There was no The Only Sales Leader Guide for sales leaders and sales managers. And I didn't want to call it that. So I called it Leading Growth, because that's what we're really trying to do. But it is the same structure in a way as The Only Sales Guide. It's a comprehensive view of all of the competencies that a sales manager or a sales leader needs so that the CEO will find them to be a wonderful person on their team and somebody that they want to spend time with and somebody that they're going to support. So that's the starting point for this book, is it's changed out there. And if you're training your team in a legacy approach where it looks like solution selling and we start with, let me tell you how great our company is and look at all these logos. That's our trophy case. Look, we've got Procter & Gamble and we show you all these big logos. And then we tell you about our solutions. And then we say, tell me about your problems. We've done that now for, I'm going to say 40-ish years, right in that neighborhood. And it just doesn't work in this environment. It's a difficult environment for people. And they're not trying to figure out whether or not they're going to buy from you. They're trying to figure out, what the heck am I supposed to be doing right now? Yeah. Like it doesn't work the way that it worked in the past. So this book updates the competencies for sales managers and sales leaders to have a different structure for how they pursue revenue growth.
I think it's one of the hardest things that CEOs have to do is let go of the past, because what they're doing is remembering when sales were flowing in really easily, or they're remembering maybe the days when they were actually in sales and not a CEO, and all of the things that they did that actually really worked back then under different circumstances. And so the metrics that they're using to measure how many calls are people making and how many emails are they sending in, how many LinkedIns, these things just don't really matter. It's much harder to get someone's attention and to get a conversation with them, which in my opinion, the thing they should be measuring is conversations, because that's what matters. When we have conversations, we find out whether people can buy from us or not. But the way that we're also expecting salespeople to conduct a sale, I mean, this just happened last week. A salesperson that I know very well, because it's my brother, came to me and said, let me show you what my CEO wants me to do. This is the deck he wants me to use. And this is what he wants me to say. Now, my brother is 57 years old and he's been in sales a long time. And he knows that this is not the right thing to do, right?
They're
but that CEO thinks it's the only way to go.
It's because it worked for them. And every single CEO and every sales leader, sales manager is looking through a lens. Now, in this lens, what they're looking through is false assumptions, misconceptions, a view that is, it worked for me 30 years ago, must still work now. 30 years ago was a long time ago. And
but
I look at some of
10 years ago and even 10, 5 years ago, there's that it just doesn't work that way anymore.
If you look at some of the oldest trainings that you could give your team, they're 55 years old. So that is 1967. Right. That's a very, very different environment. And what you said, I love that you said this. All those things worked in their time. They did.
They
and
did.
So when people are like, that doesn't work. Well, I promise you that it worked in the past. It did work very, very well. And I executed that. I actually understood the transactional sale. I started making cold calls when I was 13. By the time I was 17, I was making a lot of cold calls and making actual sales calls. I've done it for a long time, and I keep telling people, like, you're wrong. It worked really, really well. The environment changed. If it changes back and it looks like that, some of these strategies might work. But right now, what we think is at the very beginning of this, the CEO has to have a vision, and their sales leaders have to have a vision. And that vision is about what do they want. And I'll just give you an example. I have one client who said to me, we did $10 million. Our goal next year is $12 million. And I said, that is probably the worst goal I've ever heard anybody say. And you should be ashamed of yourself and start over.
Right.
And they said, why? And I said, well, you already know you're going to do 2 million more. And they said, what do you think our goal should be? And I said, 20 million. And they said, 20 million? How are we going to go from 10 to 20? And I said, that's the greatest question you could have asked. How are you going to do it?
Right.
And they said, we're going to need more salespeople. We're going to need bigger deals. We're going to need to create more value for our customers. And I'm like, that's a good list. Start writing it down. Like, that's what you're going to do. I'd love to tell you they got the 20 million, but they didn't. They got the 17,800,000.
Wow.
So quite a bit better. But the vision.
And 12 million. Yeah.
They would have.
The problem is with goals, to me, is sometimes people think, oh, set a goal. And I do agree with it to some degree, but sometimes it limits you. You set a goal of 12 million, you hit 12 million, so what?
Yeah. They were going to do it anyway.
Right.
They would have done it. But the part of the vision that I care about is, what do you want your team to be? And so that's the starting part of the vision. Like, who are they going to be? And so one of the things, I put all of the things about my team in this book so you can see what I say about them. I demand that they are the most effective sales force in the industry. They have to be, right? Because If they're not, then that's a reflection on me not having the right kind of salespeople on my team, which means you might not trust me with your team. And if you talk to Beth on my team, you'll go, she's really good. Yeah, of course she is. And that's true in all of my businesses. The salespeople are just super highly effective because we have some standards. And the standard is we create more value in a conversation than someone else. But without that vision, there's nothing really to talk about. Like you have to do the revenue formula. The revenue formula is pretty easy. Take your existing revenue, subtract your churn, and then add on what you need to get to your goal. And once you start looking at that churn number, so my friends who said 12 million, losing one deal means you need 3 million to get to 2 million. So that's how it works. And we don't take account of those things. But when you look through the book and you start to see all of these things that I expect of a sales force, then you start to see that there's a vision. And that vision is what allows you to actually pursue that growth and win it. So the CEO has to be part of this. And there's a chapter in here about alignment. And so they have to get everybody aligned, like customer success, marketing, the sales function, it all has to be going the same direction. Even operations has to be aligned with this. What are we selling?
Yeah, I'm just going to add operations and finance, because finance plays a big role with your customers. And sometimes we don't even recognize, you know, what our accounting finance departments are doing with our customers. So the CEO is the only one in the organization who can orchestrate all of the departments to work together, right? To have a more customer focused approach that meets the customer from where they are, you know, top of funnel all the way through the expansion. And if the CEOs don't start to shift their mindset to recognize that, they'll keep doing the approach that they're doing, which isn't working very well now and will continue to decline. So thinking about that, Anthony, and what they need to do to orchestrate all of that to allow their company to sell, because it's not just about sellers anymore. Sales is not about sellers, right? Sales is what marketing is doing.
Everybody.
Customer success is every department is doing to move the customer along their journey and to help them make decisions and help them come to consensus and all of those things. So thinking about that, then the CEO's role now in sales has become more important than ever. So let's talk about that.
The CEO is going to be the orchestrator. I mean, you're going to orchestrate this, and you are going to have a lot of different projects going on at the same time if you want everybody going the same direction. And it doesn't help you to go out and win a deal and then not be able to satisfy that client and churn them out. So I would describe churn as the devil. Like, churn is the devil. Like, once you have churn, and now you, and I'll just tell you the story of how I learned this. I lost my largest client one year. I had a $38 million business at that time. I lost a $6 million client. And we churned 3 million naturally. That's 9 million. So I need 9 million and $1 to be above 38 million. I got back to 38 million. For some reason, the gods of sales were not happy with me for some reason. I have no idea what I had done to anger the gods. But the next year in January, I lost my second largest client, another $6 million. So I went 38, 38, 38 in a row, unbelievably difficult. And then after that, I stabilized the business and we were able to start growing after that. But your job is to orchestrate all of these. So if the operations is responsible for the churn, or if we're not treating the client that the way that they need to, they're not getting new value from us, they don't feel the love, and they decide to go around and start becoming promiscuous and talking to our competitors, then we end up having to work a lot harder, right? We have to do a lot more work to try to just get back to even, and you don't want to do that. So the two chapters that follow after this are transformation. And I think that you've been hinting to this the whole time. Things have changed. And if your sales force hasn't changed, and if the way you're leading your sales force hasn't changed, you are going to have the problem that I heard five times now in the last month. So from clients, I've heard this. We can get the first meeting, but we can't convert it to a second meeting.
Yeah.
And what that means is you didn't create enough value that that person wants to have another meeting with you. Five,
right, exactly.
All large companies who all are very successful. One of them has a market cap of $60 billion and their sales force can't do this now. And it's because everything came to them for so long. They don't realize now that I'm expecting you as a buyer to educate me, to inform me, to enlighten me, to take that lens that how we used to do it and then like move it out of the way, right? And now let me give you another lens. Now, my lens is not all filled with false assumptions. I'm showing you what reality looks like now and what you need to do. And then once the client sees that, they realize what the challenger guys called challenging. I call something different because I don't really think I'm challenging anybody. What I'm doing is challenging the status quo mostly. And then I'm also trying to give them the paradigm shift. Like, this is the way you did it. You can break from the past and you can move forward, or you can keep your assumptions and you're going to do the same thing over and over and over again. So a transformation for a team to a modern approach means that they're going to be what I call one up. And one up means I know more than you and I have greater experience than you do about this decision, not about everything. I'm ignorant on all kinds of other things and you can educate me, and I'm happy to be one down and being educated. Love it. It makes me smarter. The only things I've ever learned, I learned from my clients by asking them questions. But right now they need more of us helping them understand what's going on, what it means for them, and what they need to do. So that transformation means you're going to have a different sales force on the other end that can create greater value.
Right. And so I think value is so important. I was talking to Brent Adamson about that today and talking about value and how we bring value. Unfortunately, I don't see us training salespeople on how to bring value. I don't see us training salespeople on guiding people through decision-making. I don't see us training salespeople on how to bring groups to consensus. But those seem to be three things that salespeople need to do today, Anthony.
And if they don't know how to do it and they've not been enabled to do it, and some of this means you have to have some projects to do enablement so that you can give people the insights and give them the ability to be one up. You can borrow experience from other people, you know, if you want to. So but that could speed it up for people. But if they don't do that, I think that they're going to struggle. Let me say, even if your revenue goes up, it won't go up what it could go up. So your potential is larger than you imagine. And if you change the way you sell, so it's not about what you sell, it's about how you sell. And if you get the how we sell right, then you have a better shot of reaching your full potential.
Yeah. So when you want to impact an entire sales organization, Anthony, and you go to the CEO and let's say they can switch their mindset and start to understand that the buyers have changed drastically. Buyers are risk averse. They have a lack of confidence in how to buy things. They don't know how to buy something for their own company, right? They know a lot of people are going to have to get involved. Sometimes they don't know who all the people are. And we're trying to now train our sales leaders and our salespeople, right? Train our salespeople to navigate this type of sale and train our sales leaders to coach this type of sale. What are some of the things that CEOs should be looking out for to support that? So what do we need to maybe retrain or train sales leaders on and salespeople?
So one of the things that we know that people have to do if they want to adopt something new like this. So you go to Alvin Toffler, who wrote Future Shock, right? He said that the future is going to be dominated by people who can learn, unlearn, and then learn again. Yes. So that's where we are right now. So the hard part is the unlearning. Yes. This worked for me, Alice, for the last two decades. And now you're telling me I'm wrong and I have this history of success. Yes, that's what I'm telling you. But they have to be willing to unlearn some of what they do. In a chapter in Leading Growth, I have a chapter on effectiveness. So if you're the CEO or you're a sales leader and you're responsible for revenue growth, the most important thing for you to work on is increasing the effectiveness of your salesperson in the conversation with their client. Because I have no idea why people think that product matters and all these other things matter. It's a conversation. And the conversation is the only way you can build value for that client. There is nothing else that you can give them that they feel the same way about. So when they're being educated and informed and enlightened and they're going, I'm getting closer to being able to make this decision because I now understand things that I didn't even know existed. And I know how to weight these factors because you taught me that. then we're actually scoring points. So if you're a CEO, what you want to prioritize and say, my sales team will, they will absolutely work on effectiveness as our number one outcome for the year. And you can do this as a perennial, like keep, you can stay on this. Alice, you get to speak at conferences like I do. And I've been to one where the first year, like, we're going to be challengers. Yay, we're going to be challengers. Everybody's happy and everybody's all excited. The next year, I happened to speak to them again. We're going back to basics. And like, yes. You didn't even do the challenger thing yet. Like, right. You said you were going to do that last year. You're doing this again. And then it turned into, we're going to do account-based marketing, like the third year. Like, you didn't execute anything. Just worry about their effectiveness. Give them better tools for consensus building and creating value so that they can go out and win business for you. And that's where growth comes from. It's the conversations that we're having. So hire well, develop your people, make sure they're as effective as they can be. And that is the CEO's charge. And it should be something that they say, this is going to cascade all the way through the organization.
Right. Well, we all know that flavor of the week, month or year only works if you're Baskin Robbins. Other than that, you know, pick something and stick with it. I think one of the biggest issues I see today with sales organizations, and when I say that now, I say it more broadly, let's call them go-to-market organizations or the whole commercial engine, as we're calling it these days, is that we don't hold people accountable. And without accountability, it doesn't matter how much training and coaching, right? So I can train you and then I can coach you. But then if at the in the end, I don't say you did it or you didn't do it, and you need to do it, right? And if you still can't do it after all that training and coaching, then maybe this is not a good fit for you, or maybe I need to do something a little bit differently to help you do it. But I see accountability as a huge problem here. And I think that that starts absolutely at the highest level in the organization.
Right.
That starts with the CEO and the senior leadership team. And earlier you said the word expectations, right? What are the expectations? The CEO has to have these expectations that we are going to make these changes and those changes are going to help us grow. But if we put different things into play and we have an expectation, but we don't hold anybody accountable, it just falls apart. And I just see it time and time again. And it goes with the whole flavor of the week thing. We trained them to do Challenger and they didn't do it, and we didn't hold them accountable to do it. Right. So this year we must need something different to get the sales to improve. So how do we work with that, Anthony? How do we get CEOs to help their teams understand what it means to set out expectations and then hold people accountable? Forget what the flavor is, but whatever it is you choose to do, and in this new way you choose to meet your buyer, how do we hold them accountable for that?
If you don't recognize that when we do this work and transformation, that what we're asking people to do is make a behavioral change. Now, if you're accountable only for, did you put this in the CRM or something like that? That's right. Not what we're looking for. No. We're looking for the behavioral change that says, I took the first 8 slides that I've used for years that say, why us? And I moved them to the back of the PowerPoint deck where they actually belong. And I'm starting with an insight base. Even though I'm a little bit uncomfortable briefing a CFO, I'm now going to brief them because I think our data is right. And I think they can benefit from this. The leader has to set different expectations. So I'll give you an example. I have 2 chapters on accountability, one on accountability itself, and then I had to do another one on the structures. So one structure you could consider is making people self-report instead of looking at your CRM. Yeah. Like, you're not holding anybody accountable by looking at the CRM. You are when you're looking into their eyes and you're asking them, what did you do last week? And then they have to say it out loud. It's a very, very different kind of accountability. And it means I care enough about you to make sure that you succeed. So that's number one. Number two on this with accountability, some people say something like, Alice, you know, it would be great if you did a little bit more prospecting. And then they're like, I'm mad as hell at Alice. Why? She's not doing the prospecting. Well, what did it mean when you said that? Was it 2 calls, like 5 emails? What did you expect Alice to do? Now, you can't be mad at Alice because she has no idea what you're talking about. Now, if I say, Alice, I need you to prospect 90 minutes a day on these targeted accounts that we have in our territory and account plan. And then at the end of the week, I want you to tell me who you got meetings with and what's the next step in the ones that you've already met with. So I'm going to have a deadline, but I want you to know with great specificity what I expect from you, because I don't want to be mad at you because I didn't give you the information that you needed. So the starting point is tell them really what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And I have sales leaders that say this to me, am I allowed to make them prospect? And I'm like, well, they only do two things. They create opportunities and they pursue them. Like, that's the only two things they have to do. And if you just say, yes, I need you to give me 90 minutes, it's 7.5 hours out of a week. I think that's perfectly fair. And I also think that you're allowed to be an autocrat about three things. I mean, you can be an, you can't be an autocratic. You have a terrible culture if you're an autocrat, but you're allowed to say, I have three non-negotiables. Non-negotiable number one is we prospect for 90 minutes first every yes. day. And that's fair enough, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The prospecting has to be done. If we don't prospect, we don't have conversations. If we don't have conversations, we can't move deals forward or
and all
you know,
we can do
understand
is pray, right? Then after that, we just have to pray for good luck.
Right. Just pray. You know, I think that we have to drive the activity that gets us to a conversation. And that should be our sole focus. And then having that conversation is not enough just to measure that we had it or that we didn't. Then the second thing we have to measure is the quality of that conversation.
Right.
But just as you said, we have to be very specific, right? We expect you to have a quality conversation, a value conversation. Here's what that conversation looks like today. It looked like this years ago. It looked like Bant. Oh, I got a person on the phone. Great. Let me ask them if they have the budget, the need, the authority, whatever. I did that in the wrong order, the budget, the authority, the need, and what their timing is. That's not the conversation we're having anymore. In fact, I don't even want you to ask them about the budget because we don't even know if we can solve their problem, right? So we want to have a value conversation around the problem and the insights we can bring to that problem and what we know about it and have learned about it and ask them more questions so they understand it better. But if we don't, if the salespeople don't know what that looks like and the leaders don't either, they're listening to the conversations and they're hearing a conversation that maybe moved the discussion forward to the next, but did it actually do what we wanted it to do? So I think what you stated is absolutely accurate that we have to give them the specificity. This is what a value conversation sounds like and how we move to the next level. So salespeople need to know it. Sales leaders need to hear it, you know it when they hear it. Oh, that's it. They did it. They did a value conversation. And I think that CEOs need to understand it too, because a lot of times we do bring our CEOs into conversations when it's appropriate, right? Because they need to meet with a senior leader, but they're not having value conversations. They're back to saying how great our company is, right? And how many years we've been in business and who our biggest logos are. So we have to retrain them as well and really understand what these conversations sound like and make sure that we're having them.
Now, Alice, I know I'm many, many years older than you. So I want to just remind you, through our experience, you and I in sales and working in this industry that we're in, it's always been more moving. Like sales has always been moving towards greater value creation for the client. It just has. And it continues to go that way. So I know that there are still transactional sales and those are all being done on Amazon and on other websites like that. But when we're now across from somebody who's B2B with a complex sale and they've got uncertainty about it and they've not made this decision, like the last time they made it was 11 years ago.
Or never, because they're a millennial who, you know, has that equipment or that software or whatever has been at this company forever. And I've never been part of the decision to buy that.
Yeah. So how do I know? I need somebody who's one up that has greater experience who can tell me this is the path that you need to go down. Whether you buy from us at the end or someone else, you need to know these things. So if you start teaching, you start informing, you start enlightening them, and you start getting rid of their terrible lens that they're looking through. And then they go from ignorance to enlightened. And then they think, I feel really good about working with this team because they seem to have helped me more than anybody else. That's what we have to prepare people to do. And I'll just say one word on Bant. That's never been a good experience for the person that gets that. I had a guy call me a couple months ago, and he started with this conversation with me, with qualifying me. And I said, are you really qualifying me? You called me to ask me to buy something from you and you're qualifying me. Why did you decide to call me? And he goes, I think you're qualified. I'm like, then why are you asking me? Why wouldn't you just start by telling me what you can do for me?
Right.
Like, why wouldn't you start with
show the value right up front?
Like, there's no reason to wade into it. I don't even believe in rapport building unless you're in maybe the deep South where somebody says, Alice, who's your people? You know, how long you been in? It's slower there than it is on the corridor, you know, between Washington, right. D.C. Right. and Connecticut. But there are some places where it's customary. But most of the time now, a CEO that's listening to this, you know, when somebody comes in and they're like, oh, you have kids and I have kids. Look, we're practically brothers. Like, we should do business together. That doesn't work. They're not interested in that. But they are going to find rapport in a business conversation.
Right.
They are.
Any
they're business
people. That you bring.
Yeah. If you have a business acumen and you can talk to them, you're a peer. If you think that you're going to talk about the picture on their desk and somehow win their love, you're going to be disappointed.
This way that we go to market now makes it so difficult to become a customer. I always asking people, what are you doing to make it easier to be your customer and harder to be your competitor? Because I go to your website and I can't even figure out what you do. There's no videos on there that show me your product or success or anything. I'm thinking, you are not helping me. I'm going to bounce right off your site into somebody else's who does have those things. Because then once I've watched those, I'm ready to talk to a salesperson.
I did this, Alice, last year. I was looking for a project and I was trying to find somebody who could help me with this project. And I went out and I watched 45 minutes of videos. There were 45, there were three 15-minute videos. At the end of it, I was offered a chance to ask for a meeting. And they sent me a note saying, we can't meet with you until more than a week away from here. And I'm like, I'm full hot right now. Like, I've got my wallet out. I'm ready to hand you the money right now. And you're going to make me wait. And they made me wait. And I was like, do you know how frustrating you are? Like, I was already through the whole buyer's journey. And I didn't believe I could get through the whole buyer's journey on videos. And I'm here to tell you, I got all the way through the buyer's journey where I'm like, just swipe the card.
Sign me up. Right. Let's go. Yeah. I think that is so unfortunate. And I have had so many similar experiences recently trying to help my customers buy things and doing research and looking and like, I can't get what I need from you. You are really repelling me, not attracting me to you. And even think about this, such a simple thing that any CEO could make sure their company has is a chat on the website where there are humans that can answer, not a chat bot that is super frustrating because it can only answer certain things, but a human. Because what I try to explain to people all the time is we're all busy. Our plates are full. And if I am now put in charge of this project at my company and I have to research some solutions to bring to the bigger team and say, okay, I've researched these, I've narrowed it down to three, and we're all going to work together to decide which one is the best out of these three. I have to do that at some time during the day. Now, you know, I cannot do that between 8 and 5 because I've got meetings and I have, you know, a lot of other things I have to pay attention to. So I get my dinner, I put those kids to bed, and I get on the internet between 9 and midnight to try to find this solution for my company, right? And do my research. But none of your salespeople are available between 9 and midnight unless they're global, right? And somebody's there to answer. But you could, because our world is global, you could have somebody trained who's on that chat who could answer a lot of my questions and then help me get scheduled right away. And I luckily had the most amazing experience with this little company called Gift Goose when I was looking at all the sending platforms for some clients and trying to figure out which one was for them. And since my clients are smaller, they're not going to use, you know, all the big names in that space. So I had to find some alternatives. The only one that had a live person at 9 p.m. at night on their site was Gift Goose. And the guy was tremendous. He, you know, told me his name. He answered my questions. He got me everything I needed. And then he sent me a gift.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. That's making it easy to buy. And so what did I do? I recommended to my clients that that's the one that they should, at least one of the ones that they should check out. None of the other ones had anybody to talk to me. They had some videos and some chat bots that couldn't answer my questions. So I think, how easy was that? And really, what did that cost?
What did
you know,
it cost?
And that made it easy for me to buy.
What did it cost the competitors who weren't there to take your call? Like then,
it cost them not recommending.
Yeah, and who knows how many people you're going to recommend.
So it's very interesting what's happening today. So I really have enjoyed talking with you, and I'd like to just have you leave us with a couple of last words, or maybe even something from your book that you really love, so that CEOs can really start to think about this differently. I'm sure if they listen to this conversation, they already are.
Well, here's what I would tell you. I'm going to start signing these books, but I'm going to put it in the signature page. I'm going to put Lead and Grow. So that's Leading Growth is the book, but you need to lead your team. Like, yeah. don't leave anything untaken care of. Like, don't ignore it. Like, be there for your team. Yeah. And the second thing is you have to have everybody grow. Everybody has to grow when they're in your charge. And the bigger that they grow and the more effective that they become, the easier it is to continually create new revenue. And so those are the things that I would say. If you take anything away, make them do the work to be as effective as possible, help them grow, and then they'll help you grow.
Yeah, very good, very good. And we will put Anthony's new book in the show notes so that you can all get a copy. Thank you again for being with me today on Sales Talk for CEOs.
Thanks, Alice. Good to see you.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn. And let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.